don't know anything about cows, says Flora bluntly. Or the country.
Or almonds, puts in Mark.
Okay, people, Demeter takes charge in her usual way. She dumps the papers on the table and grabs a marker pen. Thankfully, I know about the country, unlike all you poor urban creatures.
Really?
Flora looks taken aback, and I sit up. I'm looking at Demeter with a new eye. She knows about the country.
Absolutely. I go to Babington House at least 4 times a year, so I do have an inside track on this.
She eyes us all as though daring us to disagree. And the truth is, the country is very cool. It's absolutely the new town. Demeter scribbles out smelly and scary and begins writing. These are our watchwords. Organic, authentic, artisan, values, honest, Mother Earth. The look we want is, she considers for a moment, brown recycled paper, organic hemp, twine, handmade, rustic but fresh, and a story, she holds up one of the brochures. So we don't just say, this yogurt comes from a cow, she taps the photo. We say, this yogurt comes from an English longhorn named Molly. We run a competition. Bring your children to milk Molly. I'm biting my lip. That cow in the photo isn't an English longhorn. It's a Guernsey. But I'm not sure correcting Demeter on cow breeds in public is a very bright idea.
That's good, says Rosa.
I didn't realize you were so into the country, Demeter. The name Demeter actually means goddess of the harvest, Demeter replies, looking smug. There's a very rural, down-to-earth side to me. I mean, I always shop in farmers markets when I can.
Oh, I love farmers markets, chimes in Flora. Like those eggs you get in straw. So cute.
Exactly. Straw. Demeter nods and writes down straw.
Okay, I can see this now, says Mark, nodding and scribbling on his design pad. All natural. This yogurt isn't mass-produced, it's crafted.
Exactly, crafted. Very good.
Demeter scribbles crafted on the board. So, he pauses. A wooden yogurt pot, maybe.
Oh, my God, exclaims Flora. That is genius. Wooden yogurt pots. You could collect them and, like, put stuff in them. Like pencils. Makeup.
Very expensive, says Demeter thoughtfully. But if we turn this into an ultra, ultra high-end brand, she taps the marker on her hand thoughtfully.
Prestige pricing, says Rosa, nodding.
I know about prestige pricing. It's where you charge more money and consumers think, oh, that must be good, and buy a whole heap more.
I think people would pay a lot of money for a wooden pot with artisan yogurt in it, says Mark, seriously. And the name of the cow printed on the pot.
We'll brainstorm names, agrees Rosa. The cow's name is crucial. It's everything, in fact.
Daisy,
suggests Flora.
Not Daisy,
counters Liz firmly. Anything else? Demeter addresses the table, and I raise a hand. I fought to get into this meeting. I have to contribute.
You could talk about whether they look after their cows properly, I volunteer. I mean, they're called contented cow yogurt, so they must be happy cows or whatever. And we could use this idea in the image.
Yes, Demeter seizes on this. Animal welfare. Huge. Happy animals. Huge. She writes happy shiny cows on the board and underlines it.
Well done.
She gives me a nod, and I feel myself blossom. I contributed something in the meeting. Okay, it was just a small something, but it's a start. After the meeting ends, I send a batch of survey results to Demeter. Then she sends back a message saying, actually, could she have them all in a different format? Which, on the one hand, is a pain, but on the other hand, means that at least I don't sit there all morning doing nothing but getting nervous about my date or whatever it is. I'm occupied. I'm focused. I'm barely even thinking about lunchtime. Okay, full disclosure, this is a lie. I'm totally getting nervous. How could I not? This is Alex Astalis. He's huge. As I now realize, having Googled him for 2 solid hours last night, I can't believe I thought he was some random guy.
I can't believe I thought he might be an intern. This is the trouble with meeting people in real life. They don't come with profiles attached, or maybe it's a good thing. If I'd known he was so important, I never would have messed around on stilts with him. Anyway, time to go. I pull my hair behind my ears, then forward, then back again. Ugh, I don't know. At least my bangs look okay. I hadn't realized how high-maintenance bangs were before I got them. They're so bloody needy. If I don't smooth mine down with hair straighteners every day, they pop up all morning like, "Hi, we're your bangs. We thought we'd spend all day at a 45-degree angle. That okay by you?" Anyway, it really is time to go. I stand up so self-consciously that I'm sure everyone will turn from their screens and say, "And where are you going?" But of course, they don't. No one even notices as I leave. The pop-up Christmas cheer place is a bit of a walk from the office, and as I arrive I feel rosy-cheeked and out of breath. Apparently it pops up every December, but no one knows quite how to describe it. It's a kind of market come cafe come fairground, with a gingerbread house for children, and mulled wine for grown-ups, and carols blaring through a sound system. I see Alex at once, standing by the mulled wine stand. He's wearing a slim-fit coat, a purple scarf, and a grey hipster cap, and holding two plastic glasses of mulled wine. He grins as soon as he sees me and says, as though we're mid-conversation, "You see, this is the problem. They have a merry-go-round, but no one to go on it." He gestures at the merry-go-round, and he's right. There are only a couple of toddlers sitting on horses, both looking fairly terrified. "All the children are in school," he adds, "or they've gone home for lunch. I've been watching them disappear." "Mulled wine?" He hands me a glass. "Thanks." We clink the plastic, and I feel a little exhilarated swoop inside. This is fun, whatever this is. I mean, I can't quite work out if it's business or not business. Whatever, it's fun. "So, to work," Alex drains his drink. "And the question is, can we rebrand this?"
"What?" I echo, puzzled.
"This. This pop-up."
"What? This?"
I look round.
"You mean the fair? Market thing?"
"Exactly." His eyes gleam. "It doesn't even know what to call itself. But they want to roll out all over London. Cash in on seasonal cheer. And go large. Bigger venues. Advertising. Tie-ins.
Right. Wow."
I look around the stalls and fairy lights with new eyes. "Well, people do love Christmas. And people do love a pop-up." "But a pop-up what?" counters Alex. "Is it a gourmet food destination? Or is it fun for the kiddies? Or a craft fair? Or what?" He brandishes his empty glass at me. "What do we think of the mulled wine?"
"Very good," I say truthfully.
"Whereas the merry-go-round," he wrinkles his nose. "A little tragic, no?"
"Maybe they need to focus on the food," I nod. "Food is a huge deal."
"Do they need the other stuff?"
"Good question."
Alex starts toward the merry-go-round. "Let's try it out."
"What?"
"We can't assess the merry-go-round unless we go on the merry-go-round," he says gravely. "After you." He gestures toward the horses, and I grin back. "Well, okay." I clamber up onto a horse and fumble for my purse, but Alex holds up a hand. "On me, or rather on the company. This is essential research." He climbs up onto the horse next to mine and pays the attendant, who is a grumpy-looking guy in a parka. "Now, I expect we'll have to wait for the hordes to join us," Alex observes, and I can't help giggling. "It's us and the two toddlers. No one else is even nearby."
"In your own time," Alex cheerfully calls to the guy in the parka, who ignores us.
I can feel my bangs blowing about in the wind and curse them silently. Why can't they stay put? This is quite bizarre, sitting on a wooden horse, at eye level with a guy who in theory is my boss, but doesn't feel like my boss. Demeter feels like my boss. Even Rosa feels a bit like my boss. But this guy feels like... My stomach squeezes with yearning before I can stop it. He feels like fun. He feels like cleverness and irreverence and wit and charm, all packaged up in a long, lean frame. He feels like the man I've been waiting to meet ever since I moved to London, ever since I wanted to move to London. I surreptitiously run my eyes over him, and a fresh wave of longing overcomes me. That knowing flash in his eye, those cheekbones, that smile.
So what's happening with the products from Asia, I ask. The stilts and stuff?
Oh, those. A frown crosses his face. We're not taking the project on. We don't think it'll work, teaming up with Sydney Smith.
I feel a tweak of disappointment. I suppose I'd half imagined working on the project with him.
Okay, full disclosure, I totally imagined working on the project with him. Maybe late into the night, maybe ending up in some passionate clinch on the shiny lacquer table in Park Lane.
So, head won over heart.
That's right.
Shame,
I venture, and an odd, lopsided smile passes over Alex's face. Heads, hearts, same old, same old.
Although, actually, I say after a moment's thought, maybe it was heart over head. Maybe you don't want to work with Sydney Smith, so you've made out like it was a rational business decision, but it was instinct all along. I don't know what's giving me the confidence to speak out so openly. Maybe it's the fact we're both sitting on fairground horses.
You're bright, aren't you? Alex gives me a sharp look. I think you're right. Truth is, we just don't like those Sydney Smith guys.
There you go.
Is there a difference between heads and hearts anyway? Alex seems fascinated by the topic.
People talk about head over heart, I say, thinking aloud. But they mean one part of their head over another part of their head.
It's not really head over heart. It's head over head. Or heart over heart. Alex's eyes glint at me.
There's a strange little silence between us, and I wonder where on earth I can segue naturally from here. I'm not sure if it's the way he's looking at me or the way he said heart like that, but either way, my own heart's feeling a bit fluttery right now. Then Alex leans over, breaking the mood.
Hey, your hair's gone mad.
Abruptly, I forget all about the Asian products, heads and hearts.
My bloody bangs.
It always does that, I say, flushing. It's awful,
he laughs. It's not awful.
It is. I should never have got bangs cut, but I stopped dead. I can't exactly say, but I wanted to look like a different person.
It's just a bit... the breeze. He leans over from his wooden horse toward mine. May I?
Sure, I swallow. No problem.
Now he's gently tweaking my bangs. I'm fairly sure this is against company policy. Bosses aren't supposed to adjust hair.
Are they?
His face is only inches away from mine now, and my skin tingles under his gaze. His brown eyes are surveying my face in that frank, interested way he has. As they meet mine, they seem to have a question in them.
Or do they?
Oh, God. Am I inventing all this? My thoughts are lurching wildly back and forth. I can feel a spark here. I really can. But can he? I mean, I only met this guy yesterday. Now I'm on what might be a date. Feels like a date. Except he's my superior. And I don't know for sure what's going on. Without warning, the merry-go-round starts up, and Alex, who's still leaning toward me, falls half of his horse.
Shit!
He grabs at my horse's neck. Oh, God! I cry out. Hold on! The horses are farther apart from each other than you'd think, and Alex is now suspended between the two, almost horizontally. He looks like some action hero between two cars. Well, not exactly like an action hero, since this is a merry-go-round, and jingly music has started playing, and a little kid is pointing at him and yelling,
"That man fell off his horsey!"
His hands are gripping my horse's neck, and I can't help staring at them. He's got bony fingers, strong wrists. His sleeve is ridden up to reveal a tiny tattoo on one, an anchor. I wonder what that's all about.
I should have had horse riding lessons first. Alex is panting as he tries to right himself. I nod, trying not to laugh.
Merry-go-round horses are pretty dangerous. I mean, you're not even wearing a riding hat. It's foolhardy.
Reckless, he agrees.
Oi, you! The man in the parka has noticed Alex. Stop mucking around!
Okay, with an almighty heave, Alex gets himself back in his saddle. The horses are swooping up and down as we spin around, and I grin madly at Alex.
I take it back, he shouts over the music. This is great!
Yes, I call back. I love it!
I want to freeze-frame this moment in my mind, whirling around on a merry-go-round with a gorgeous, funny guy at Christmas. I mean, all I need is for a few snowflakes to fall and the scene will be perfect.
Rosa!
Alex suddenly calls to someone on the ground and my scene splinters.
Rosa, as in Rosa.
We're up here!
Alex waves his arms.
Gerard! Rosa!
There's Rosa, in her dark green peacoat, staring up at us blankly. Beside her, a grey-haired guy I don't recognise is tapping at his iPhone. As the merry-go-round comes to a halt, I feel my happy glow fade away. Right. So, whatever this is, it's not a date. I mean, I never thought it was a date. I didn't. I only ever thought it was date-ish. What is date-ish? Just for a few minutes. We both slither down from our horses, with Rosa watching unsmilingly, and I suddenly feel stupid that we were up there in the first place. Alex heads straight to Rosa and the grey-haired man.
Hi there. Rosa, you know Cat.
Gerard,
says the man, and we shake hands.
What are you doing here, Cat? Rosa frowns. I didn't know you were on this project.
I brought her into the group, says Alex easily. Another pair of eyes. Where are the others?
On their way, says Rosa. And I really think, Alex, that this is all about specifics.
I spoke to Dan Harrison today, and he's incredibly vague.
As she talks, she heads toward the market stalls. Alex seems absorbed in what she's saying, and Gerard, whoever Gerard is sending a text. As I trail along behind, I feel totally mixed up. So this was always a work thing. It was always a group thing. Am I all wrong about everything? Did I fabricate that spark between us? Am I a deluded loon crushing on my boss? But then, as we're walking along, Alex turns and gives me a little wink, a little flash of camaraderie. You and me, he seems to say. And although I don't react beyond smiling politely back, I clutch it to my heart, like a hug. I didn't invent that. That was something. I'm not sure what, but something. I don't stay at the pop-up for as long as the others, because Alex gets caught up in some long phone call from New York, during which Rosa makes it quite plain she thinks I should go back and carry on with the surveys. It was great that you gave your input, Kat, she says briskly. We love hearing from junior staff. I mean, it was very cool that Alex asked you along. But you've really got to crack on with that research, yeah? And there's something quite steely about her tone. So, without even saying goodbye to Alex, I head back. But I don't feel dispirited. Quite the opposite. When I reach the office, I run up the stairs and hum the merry-go-round tune as I make my way to my desk. Flora looks up.
Hey, Kat, I was looking for you. So listen, do you fancy going to Portobello on Saturday?
Wow, I say in delight.
Definitely. I'd love to. Thanks.
Don't sound so overexcited, I chide myself. It's only going to Portobello Market. It's no big deal. People do this all the time. But the truth is, I don't. Weekends can be a bit lonely for me. Not that I'd ever admit it.
Great, Flora beams. Well, come to my house first. We're just round the corner, and then we'll go Christmas shopping.
As Flora babbles on, I sit at my desk, suffused with happiness. Life's turning around. First of all, an interesting man is... Well, what is he? He's on the horizon. And now I'm going to Portobello with Flora, and I can post loads of cool stuff on Instagram, and it'll be true. For once, it'll be true.
Chapter 6 The next morning is a proper crisp winter's sunny day. In fact, it's so bright I almost need sunglasses as I step out of the house. I pause on the doorstep to get some lip balm and see Alan at the front gate, engaged in some kind of argument with a stunning teenage girl as he unfolds his bike. She has glowing latte-coloured skin, bright blue-green eyes, super short hair, almost shaved, and long teenage legs poking out of a school uniform skirt. She's holding a stack of flyers, and it's these at which Alan seems to be directing his ire.
"Charities are all corrupt," I hear him saying in disapproving tones. "I'm not doing it anymore. It's all middle management bollocks and chew-bads. I'm not paying money for a chew-bad. You want to help someone? Help a real person."
I am a real person, objects a teenage girl. I'm called Sadiqa.
Well, I don't know that, do I? Says Alan. How do I know you're not a con artist?
Okay, don't give me any money, says the girl, sounding exasperated. Just sign the petition.
Yes, and what will you do with my signature? Alan raises his eyebrows as though to say, I win, and gets on his bike. And this path is private property, he adds, gesturing to our crumbling, crappy path. So don't get any ideas.
Ideas? The girl stares at him. What ideas?
I couldn't say, but I'm telling you, private property.
You think I'm planning to occupy your front path or something? Says the girl incredulously.
I'm just saying, private property, Alan repeats impassively.
He cycles off and the girl makes a furious sound, like the whinny of a horse.
Tosser,
she exclaims, and I have to agree. Hiya, I say as I approach her, wanting to make up for Alan's rudeness. Are you collecting for something?
Petition for the community centre, she says in such a garbled way it comes out, Pushkamu Centre.
She hands me a flyer reading, Save Our Community Centre, and I glance over it. It's all about cuts and children's prospects, and it seems like a really genuine thing. So I put a couple of pound coins in her tin and scrawl my name on the petition. Good luck, I say, and start striding off down the road. A moment later, I'm aware of a presence at my shoulder, and I turn to see that Sadiqa is following me. Hi, I say. Did you want something?
What do you do?
She asks, chattily.
Like your job and that?
Oh, well, I'm in branding, creating images and logos for products. It's really interesting, I add in case this is my chance to provide inspiration to the younger generation.
It's hard work, but rewarding. Do you know anyone in the music industry?
Sadiqa continues, as though I haven't spoken.
Because me and my mate Layla, we've got a band, and we made a demo.
She produces a CD from her pocket.
Layla's uncle made these. We just need to get them out there.
That sounds great, I say encouragingly.
Well done. So, can you take one?
She thrusts it at me.
Get it heard.
Get it heard? By whom? I'm not in the music industry, I explain. Sorry.
But branding, that's music, innit?
Well, not really.
But music in ads?
She persists.
Who does the music in ads? Someone does all that, and they need sounds, don't they?
She blinks at me with her blue-green eyes.
They're looking for new sounds?
You have to admire her persistence. And she's right, someone does do the music in ads, even if I have no idea who it is. Okay, look, I'll see what I can do. I take the CD from her and put it in my bag. So, good luck with it all.
Do you know any model agents?
She carries on without missing a beat. My auntie says I should be a model, only I'm not tall enough.
But why does that matter in a photo? Like, they got Photoshop. So why does it matter? Why do you need to be tall and thin? They got Photoshop. Just use Photoshop. Know what I mean? Photoshop.
She looks at me expectantly. Right, I say warily. Actually, I don't know much about modelling either. Sorry. I do really need to keep walking. Sadiqa nods with resigned disappointment, as though it's only what she expected of me. Then, easily keeping pace with my stride, she reaches into her pocket.
You want some jewellery?
I'll make jewellery. She pulls out a tangle of beaded bracelets and thrusts them at me. Fiver each. You buy them for your mates and that. I can't help bursting into laughter. Not today, I say, but maybe another day. Aren't you supposed to be collecting for your community centre?
Oh, that, she gives a philosophical shrug. That's going to close anyway. I'm just collecting because, like, we're all collecting, but we won't save it or nothing.
You might, I say. What does it do, exactly?
All sorts. Like, they give kids breakfast and that.
I always used to have my breakfast there, because my mum never... Sadiqa stops dead, and her bouncy veneer falters for an instant.
They give you cornflakes and that, but it costs money. Cornflakes every day costs money, doesn't it?
I look at her silently for a moment. I like this girl. She's funny, and energetic, and actually very beautiful, even without Photoshop. Give me a few more flyers, I say, and take them from her.
Maybe I can help you raise some money.
At the office, I find an old CD drive in the cupboard, so I plug it into my computer and listen to Sadiqa's CD. Obviously, I'm hoping that it'll blow me away and that I've discovered a star.
Sadly, it's just two girls singing a Rihanna song and then dissolving into giggles. But I decide I'll still do what I can with it, and I'll definitely try to raise money for her community center. I don't have any specific plans or even ideas, really, and I'm certainly not planning to bring it up with anyone. But then on my way out that evening, when I see Alex waiting for the same lift as me, I find myself panicking for things to say. It's gone 9 p.m. I had a stack of stuff to catch up on, and I didn't expect to see anyone, let alone him. I haven't seen him since the carousel yesterday, but of course he's crossed my mind about 95,000 times. As I approach, I can feel the blood moving to my face and a horrible awkwardness rising up my throat. How are you supposed to talk to an attractive man you think you might have a thing for anyway? I've lost every natural instinct I ever had. My face feels frozen. My hands feel flappy. As for eye contact, forget it. I have no idea what the appropriate level of eye contact is right now. Hi, he says, smiling, as I reach the lift doors. You're working late. Hi, I smile back. I had some stuff to do. And I know the onus isn't on me to continue the conversation, but as I mentioned, I'm panicking. So before I can stop myself, I blurt out, I've got a really great cause I'd like to put forward as the company charity. This isn't strictly true. I don't know it's a great cause. I only have Sadiqa's word for it. But right now, I need a topic of conversation. Oh, yes, says Alex, looking interested. It's a community centre near where I live, in Catford. It does breakfast clubs, that kind of thing. But it's closing down. Cuts, you know. I pull the leaflet out of my bag and hand it to him. This is it. Good for you, says Alex, scanning the leaflet. Well, we'll consider it for next year. Or did you want to organise some kind of fundraiser meanwhile? What did you have in mind? The lift doors open and we both step in, and of course, now my mind is totally blank. Fundraiser, fundraiser. Cupcake sale? No. Like, something that's a challenge, I say, grasping at straws. So you feel you get something out of it as well as raising money. Like the marathon, but not the marathon, I add hastily. Something hard, but not the marathon, says Alex thoughtfully as we exit the lift into the empty, dimly lit lobby. I'll tell you the hardest thing in the world, that fucking skiing exercise. My personal trainer made me do it last night, bastard, he adds so venomously I want to giggle. What skiing exercise? I say, because I've never done any skiing exercises, or any skiing, for that matter. The one where you sit against the wall. Torture. You know the one. He looks at me. You don't? He goes over to a big empty wall, screen-printed with Cooper Clemo in lots of different fonts, and takes up a position sitting against the wall, his thighs parallel to the floor. Doesn't look so hard, I say just to wind him up. Are you joking? Have you tried it? Okay, I grin. Challenge accepted. I take up a similar position, a couple of yards away from him, and for a while there's silence. The two of us are concentrating on the task in hand. I have pretty strong thighs, years of riding, but I can already feel them start to burn. Before long, they're really quite painful. But I'm not going to give in. I'm not going to.
Tough, aren't you? Says Alex in a kind of gasp.
Oh, what? This is the exercise, I manage. This is supposed to be difficult. I thought we were just warming up.
Ha, 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 ha.
Very funny. Alex is quite pink in the face.
Okay, you win. I'm out.
He slithers to the floor, just as my own thighs start feeling like they might spontaneously combust. I force myself to stay put for 3 more seconds, then collapse.
Don't tell me you could have kept going for another half hour, says Alex.
I could have kept going for another half hour, I say at once, and Alex laughs. He looks over at me, and there's a flicker of something in his eye. The same something I saw before, the you and me something. Neither of us speaks for a moment. It's one of those still little silences that you get when you're adjusting your position in a conversation, maybe striking out in a new direction. But again, I'm the one who panics, who brings things back to safety. I'm not sure how popular that'll be as a fundraiser, I say, getting to my feet.
Well, it's easier than a marathon, says Alex. You say that?
I break off and peer out of the glass doors as a flash of red catches my eye. Wait a minute. What on earth is that? The flash of red has turned into a streak. It's red and white. A cluster of red and white. I stare disbelievingly. Are those
Santa hats.
What the hell? Alex has followed my gaze and breaks into amazed laughter. What is that?
We give each other a brief look, then simultaneously make for the door. Alex swipes us out with his card and we both hurry into the crisp evening, gasping like kids at the sight before us. About 200 Santas on bikes are filling the street. Some are flashing red and white lights, some are tooting horns, and from somewhere is blasting Mariah Carey. It's like a great big travelling Santa party.
This is insane, says Alex, still laughing. Join in, calls a guy in a Santa hat, seeing us gawping. Collect a bike and a hat. Join in, he beckons invitingly. Don't be scared, be a Santa.
Alex and I stare at him, then at each other again.
Come on,
says Alex, and we dash across the road to where people are collecting bikes from the higher point opposite.
£20 to ride, Santa hat included, a girl is shouting, waving a bucket at all the onlookers. Join in, all for Great Ormond Street Hospital.
We have to do this, says Alex. Why would we not put on Santa hats and ride bikes round London? Are you free?
He meets my eyes, and again I feel a little fillip in my stomach.
Yes, I'm free. Let's do it.
I can't help laughing at the ridiculousness of it. All around us, people are joining the Santa throng and singing along to Mariah. I see a pair of Santas riding a tandem, and one guy has pitched up on a penny farthing. This is why I moved to London, I find myself thinking, with a swell of glee. This is it.
I'm paying for both of us, adds Alex firmly. I haven't done enough for charity recently, and your altruism shames me.
He puts a £50 note into the bucket before I can stop him and collects a bike, which he passes to me.
Here's your Santa hat.
The girl with the bucket holds out a hat with a light-up bobble and pops it on my head. I wheel my bike into place and look over at Alex, who's wearing a light-up hat too. Stars are flashing all around the white rim of his, making him look endearingly angelic. Thanks, I say, nodding my head at the bucket. You shouldn't have, but thanks.
You're very welcome, he smiles disarmingly.
I want to say something else, something witty, but there's no time because we're moving. It's ages since I've ridden a bike, but my feet find the rhythm instantly, and we're off, down the road, a mass of pedaling Santas, with music and laughter fueling us along our way. It's one of the most magical nights of my life. We cycle from Chiswick to Hammersmith, then Kensington High Street, still full of shoppers, and past the Albert Hall. Then Knightsbridge, where Harrods is all lit up like fairyland, and the shops are full of Christmas displays. We go along Piccadilly and up and down Regent Street, and I crane my neck to look at the dazzling festive lights overhead. The evening air is rushing against my cheeks as I pedal. There are red and white Santa hats everywhere in my vision. I can hear the jingle of bike bells and tooting of car horns acknowledging us, and the Santa cyclists roaring familiar Christmas songs over the sound system. I've never felt so invigorated. They're playing that song about it being Christmas every day. Well, I wish it could be this moment every day, cycling through Piccadilly Circus, waving at passers-by, feeling like a Londoner, and looking over every so often to smile at Alex. There hasn't really been much chance to chat, but he's always within 10 yards of me, and I know when I look back, I won't remember I cycled with the Santas. I'll remember we cycled with the Santas. At Leicester Square, we stop for hot chocolate, provided by a coffee shop chain. As I'm collecting 2 cups, Alex comes over, wheeling his bike, a broad grin on his face. Hi, I say and hand him one. Isn't it great?
Best way to travel, he says emphatically, and takes a sip. This is the end of the official route, apparently. We all split up and go our different ways, drop our bikes off wherever we like. I'm meeting someone for a drink now, anyway. He glances at his watch. In fact, I'm late.
Oh, right, I say, trying not to feel crestfallen. I'd kind of thought, hoped we might go on. But that was stupid. Of course, he's meeting someone for a drink. He's a successful guy in London, with a social life.
I just need to text them, he says absently, tapping at his phone. Now, what about you? Where are you headed?
I'm going home to Catford. There's a drop-off point at Waterloo. I force myself back into practicality. I'll head there. Then I'll catch the train.
You'll be okay?
Fine, I say brightly. And thanks again. That was fantastic. I put my hot chocolate down on the stand. It's lukewarm and not very nice, in fact. I'll be off then. See you in the office.
Sure.
A thought seems to hit Alex.
Oh, no, you won't. I'm going to Copenhagen first thing.
Copenhagen? I wrinkle my brow. Demeter's going there, too. A design conference, isn't it?
Exactly, he nods. But I'll see you around, I'm sure.
It was amazing, wasn't it? I can't help saying in a rush.
Amazing.
He nods again, smiling. And we meet eyes. And the appropriate level of eye contact right now seems to be full. For an instant, neither of us speaks. I'm not even sure I can breathe. Then Alex lifts his hand in a kind of salute, and I turn my bike to go. I could probably prolong the conversation a little longer, chit-chat about the bikes or whatever, but I want to leave while the evening is still perfect. And then rewind and play it in my head all the way home. Chapter 7 Life has a dreamy quality at the moment. Good dreamy and bad dreamy. The cycling Santas, Alex smiling at me as we pedaled along, going to Portobello with Flora later today. That's all good dreamy. The office Christmas party is on Monday night, and I keep imagining bumping into Alex in my little black dress, chatting, laughing. He puts a careless hand on my arm when no one's looking. We go on for a drink, back to his place. Okay, full disclosure, I keep imagining a lot of different scenarios. So, life would pretty much be perfect right now, if it weren't for the bad, dreamy stuff. More precisely, the fact that my laptop died on Thursday, and I had to buy a new one, and it's given me this huge, great well of fear, which I'm trying my hardest to ignore. I still can't believe it broke. The IT people at work couldn't fix it, nor could the guy in the shop. He tried for an hour, then shrugged and said, "That's fucked. Well, you needed an upgrade anyway." And my stomach went all gnarly with panic. I need a laptop for all my design projects. I couldn't not replace it. But I didn't have that money. I'm on a really tight, planned-out budget. Every pound matters. And a broken laptop is like a financial hurricane. It's made a huge hole in my finances, and whenever I contemplate it, I feel cold with terror. I've been so careful with money, so careful. And then this comes along. It's just not fair. Anyway, I won't think about it. I'll have a great day with Flora and browse all the market stalls. And obviously, I won't be able to buy anything, but that's okay, because that's not what it's about, is it? It's about the atmosphere, the vibe, the friendship. Flora has suggested we meet at her house, and as I walk along the road, I feel my jaw sagging. If I thought Demeter's house was impressive, it's nothing on these mansions. The steps are twice the size of her steps. They all have front gardens and white stucco-like wedding cakes. I find number 32 and survey it cautiously. This can't be Flora's house, surely. Is this her parents' house?
Hi!
The door is flung open and I see Flora framed in the massive doorway, still in her dressing gown.
I saw you walking along. I've totally overslept, sorry. Do you want some breakfast?
She ushers me into a hall filled with marble and lilies and a housekeeper polishing the banisters, then down an underlit glass staircase to an enormous kitchen with concrete work surfaces. Flora's parents are seriously rich, I realise, and seriously cool.
So, this is your parents' house, I say to be sure. It's amazing.
Oh, says Flora without interest.
Yes, I suppose. Do you want a smoothie?
She starts throwing fruit into a NutriBullet, followed by chia seeds, organic ginger, and some special seaweed extract, which I've seen in health shops and costs about 3 quid a shot.
Here!
She hands me a glass, and I devour it hungrily. My own breakfast was a cup of tea and oats with milk. Total cost, about 30p. Then Flora grabs a paper bag full of croissants and ushers me out again.
Come on! Help me get dressed!
Her room is at the top of the house and has its own bathroom and dressing room. The wallpaper is a sheeny silver design of birds, and there are diptyque candles everywhere, and built-in cupboards, and an antique desk. Everywhere you look, there's something gorgeous. But Flora doesn't even seem to notice her surroundings. She's pulling jeans out of her wardrobe and cursing because
She can't find the ones she wants.
So, you've just lived here since uni? I ask. You've never moved out?
Flora's eyebrows rise in horror.
Move out? God, no. I mean, I could never afford to. Like, the rent and the food and everything. Who can do that?
None of my friends have moved out.
We're all going to live at home till we're 30.
I feel a tiny swell of some emotion I don't want to admit to, like envy or possibly even, just for a nanosecond, hatred. No, take that back. I don't hate Flora. Of course I don't. But she does have everything so easy.
Well, I don't have parents who live in London, I force a cheerful smile. So, you know, I have to rent.
Oh, that's right, says Flora. Aren't you from the Midlands or somewhere? You don't have an accent, though.
Actually, I begin, but Flora has disappeared into her dressing room again. I don't think she's that interested in where I come from, to be honest. I wait patiently as Flora does her eyeliner about 5 times. Then she grabs her bag and says,
Right, let's go shopping,
with an infectious beam. She's got her blonde hair piled on top of her head, and a boho sheepskin coat, and glittery eyeshadow. And if you gave her a caption, it would read, Totally up for some fun. We run down the stairs, both giggling, and a door opens on the second floor.
Children! You'll disturb Daddy!
Mummy, we're not children! Pouts Flora as an elegant woman appears on the landing. She looks just like an older Flora, but even skinnier. She's wearing Chanel pumps and tight jeans and smells amazing.
This is Cat.
Cat! Flora's mother puts a cool hand in mine, then turns back to Flora.
Are you off to Portobello?
Yes, we're Christmas shopping, only I'm a bit broke. Flora looks wheedlingly at her mother.
And I need to find something for Granny.
Sweetheart, Flora's mum rolls her eyes.
All right, look in my bag. Take 100, no more, she adds sternly.
You're always cleaning me out of cash.
Thanks, Mummy.
Flora pecks her mother on the cheek and dances down the rest of the stairs.
Come on, Cat.
My mind is reeling. 100 quid, just like that. I haven't asked Dad for money for years.
And I never would, even if he did have a load of spare cash, which he doesn't.
I watch as Flora helps herself from her mum's purse, then follow her down the palatial white steps of her house. If Tamita has steps fit for a princess, these are steps fit for a queen. I want to take a picture, but that would be uncool. Maybe when I've got to know Flora better. The air is crisp, and as we stride along, I feel buoyant. This is such a cool area of London. The rows of pastel houses are adorable, like something from a storybook. And I keep stopping to take pictures for Instagram.
So, what do you want to get?
Asks Flora as we round the corner to Portobello, slightly battling the crowds of tourists.
I don't know, I laugh.
Nothing much.
I'll just browse.
My eyes are drinking in the sight of endless market stalls stretching ahead of us, with everything from necklaces to Kashmiri scarves, vintage cameras to antique plates. I've been to Portobello before, but not at Christmas. And it has an extra fun vibe today. There are decorations up on the lampposts, and a group of guys in hipster hats are singing a cappella carols, while a CD stall blasts out Christmas songs in competition. There are mulled wine stalls, and a mince pie stall, and a delicious scent of freshly made crepes in the air. I have a sudden flashback to sipping mulled wine with Alex, and find myself thinking, oh, will that be our drink? Before I wrench my thoughts away, like a needle off a vinyl record. Get a grip, Katie. Mulled wine. Our drink. I might as well say that Santa hats will be our headwear. Flora finds a china elephant for her granny and then drags me into a designer shop to buy a sequin dress for the office party. I wasn't intending to get anything, but it turns out that some of the prices aren't too scary. I see a woolly hat for Dad, only £8, and then a rack of £1 clothes, which Flora thinks is hilarious. Especially when I actually buy a crocheted cardigan. At another stall, we both try on crazy felt hats, and I take loads of photos, and I'm exhilarated. This is the quirky London life I always wanted to have. Flora has been texting throughout the morning, and as we pause by a stall of mirrors, she scowls at her phone. Something up? I ask, and she makes a huffing noise.
No.
Yes, she shoves her phone away.
Men. Oh, men,
I agree, even though I don't know exactly what she means.
Anyone in your life at the moment? She asks, and I feel a flutter in my stomach. I mean, the answer is no, but my mind is roaming back to that moment on the merry-go-round, the feel of Alex's fingers in my hair. No, at least, there's this guy. As I meet Flora's eyes, I laugh, partly out of relief at having someone to talk to. I'm sure he isn't interested, but I bet he is. What's he like? Oh, you know, gorgeous, dark hair, tattoo, I add with a little grin. There, that's vague enough. It could be anyone. A tattoo! Flora's eyes widen. Wow! And where did you meet him? Through other people, I say vaguely. You know, it was a bit random. So, has anything happened? She makes such a comical face that I laugh again. Nothing real, just flirting. Wishing, I add with sudden honesty. And what about you? Well, I'm supposed to be seeing this guy called Ant, only I think he's going off me. She looks disconsolate. He never replies to my texts. They don't. I know, right? What's so hard about sending a text? They think sending a text makes them lose part of their soul, I say, and Flora giggles. You're funny, she says, and links her arm in mine. I'm so glad you've joined the office, Kat. We walk on for a few seconds, and I take a photo of a stall selling only vintage car horns. Then Flora turns to me, looking thoughtful. Listen, Kat, there's something I need to ask you. Did you know we meet for regular drinks at Wednesday lunchtime, me, Rosa and Sarah, at the Blue Bear, every week? Oh, right, no, I didn't know. Well, we keep it a bit quiet. We don't want Demeter gate crashing. Flora pulls a face. Can you imagine? Ah, I nod. I get that. So, the point is, this isn't an open thing. It's like, she hesitates, it's like a gang, a club, a special little club. Right, and I'm asking you to join the club. She squeezes my arm. What about it? Are you in? I feel a joyful little surge inside. A gang, a club. I hadn't realized quite how lonely I was feeling. Definitely, I say with a huge beam. Count me in. I'll have to adjust my budget if I'm going to start buying rounds every Wednesday, but it will so be worth it. Cool. We'll start again after Christmas. I'll let you know, only don't tell Demeter. Okay, I promise. I'm about to ask where the Blue Bear is when Flora gives a loud shriek. Oh, my God! Babe, a tall dark-haired guy in a trilby has appeared from nowhere and has wrapped his arms round Flora from behind. Your mum said you were here. I've been texting you, says Flora accusingly. You should have texted. The guy shrugs and Flora pushes him and giggles, and I'm wondering whether I should slip away when Flora grabs my arm and says, This is Kat. Kat, this is Ant. She pouts charmingly up at him. And since you've been such a nightmare, Ant, lunch is on you. Ant rolls his eyes with good humour, and I hurriedly say, Actually, I'll be going. No, come with us. Flora links arms with both Ant and me and drags us across the road to the Butterfly Bakery, which I've read about in a zillion blogs. It's all pink and white stripes, and there are paper butterflies hanging everywhere from the ceiling. The customers colour them in with felt tips. It's like the gimmick. We hang up our coats on white wooden hooks by the door. Then Flora grabs a floral-printed tray for each of us and bossily starts dumping items on them. Okay, these pumpkin muffins are yummy, and the flapjack hearts are great. And we should get a salad each, and this ginger cordial is amazing. She loads up each tray, then announces, Ant, you get in the queue. We're going to nab a table. Come on, Kat. She leads me across the room to an alcove where a couple are just getting up from their lunch and high-fives me as we slide into our seats. Result! This place gets so crowded. Flora pulls out her sequin dress and looks at it lovingly. So, what are you wearing to the Christmas party? Little black dress, I say. Tried and tested. Flora nods. Good choice. Last year Demeter wore such a short dress, you could practically see her spanks, she adds disparagingly. Who's she kidding? I mean, just because you have a toy boy, it doesn't mean you're suddenly, like, 20 years younger. She's such a crone. Here, I'll show you a picture of what she looked like. Toy boy, I say with interest.
You know,
Flora's busily flicking through photos on her phone.
Alex Astalis.
It takes a moment for the words to imprint on my mind.
Alex Astalis?
I echo stupidly.
That guy you met? You mean Demeter and Alex? Oh, God, yes,
Flora nods.
They've been having a totally unsecret affair, like, forever.
My throat has clenched up. I can barely speak.
How do you know?
I manage at last.
Everyone does, she says as though in surprise. You know Demeter was Alex's boss years ago. Well, apparently the chemistry between them was sizzling. Mark told me. He knew them then. And now Alex is Demeter's boss. It's weird, isn't it?
I nod dumbly. I'm picturing a youthful Demeter, a fresh-faced Alex, sizzling chemistry. I think I'm back into bad dreamland.
Demeter was married, even then, Flora carries on. But I guess she didn't want to break that up or whatever. Anyway, that's why she came to Cooper Chemo. Alex went into partnership with Adrian, and straight away he headhunted her. So unsubtle. Look, here she is. Doesn't she look vile?
She hands me her phone, showing a photo of Demeter in a mini-dress, standing by an ice sculpture. But I can barely see it. I feel a bit cold, and deflated, and above all, incredibly stupid. It's so obvious now. I can see them together, both life, both intelligent, both at the top of their game. Of course they're lovers. It suddenly hits me. That's why they're both in Copenhagen. I can see them now, in a Scandi hotel room, having sex in some amazing athletic position that nobody else does except Demeter, because she's the first person on the whole planet to have found out about it. I'm still holding Flora's phone, staring blindly down, my thoughts scudding around. Demeter really has it all, doesn't she? She bloody has it all. The job, the house, the husband, the children, the fashionable paint shades, and Alex. Because obviously, when you're Demeter, a devoted husband isn't enough. You need a lover too, a sexy, authentic, organic lover. But what about me? My mind keeps torturing me, replaying those little moments I had with Alex. The way he smiled, the way he gently fixed my hair. Glancing over as we pedaled along, I didn't make it up. There was something. We did have a spark. But what's a spark with me when you've got a sizzling inferno going on with the goddess of sex, or whatever she is? I was just a diversion. I suddenly recall him after the Santa ride, scrutinizing his phone, saying, I just need to text them. He didn't want to say, text her. He was being discreet. But that's who he meant. Hasn't her husband guessed? I try to sound like this is all breezy office gossip. I doubt it, Flora shrugs. She's really good at lying.
Oh, Aunt!
Here we go. Aunt dumps two trays on the table. One is Flora's with her muffin, salad and all the rest of it. The other has a bowl of soup. Yours is up there, he nods at me. They put it aside for you to pay.
Me to pay?
All thoughts of Alex are swept aside and I stare up, feeling a bit hollow, I thought.
Aunt, you brute, Flora pushes him. You should have paid. Now Kat will have to queue.
No, she won't, he retorts. I told them she was coming, and they've put it aside, because I'm thoughtful like that.
But honestly, Aunt, Flora sounds exasperated, why didn't you just get her stuff?
Because I'm out of cash, okay? He glares at her. Oh, God. Now they're going to start fighting about my lunch.
It's fine,
I say brightly. No problem. Thanks so much for keeping my place in the queue, Aunt. But as I head to the checkout, I feel mounting dread. I thought Aunt was buying us all lunch. I never would have come in here otherwise. I would have made an excuse and left. I've even got a tuna sandwich in my bag, all wrapped up in cling film. It might not be that much, I tell myself as I approach the checkout. Don't overreact. It might be okay. The girl at the checkout is waiting for me and beams as she places my tray carefully in front of the till.
So that's the muffin, the salad.
She rings up each item and I try to look relaxed, like a cool, rich Notting Hill girl. Not someone who's holding her breath and making frantic calculations as each item is added. It's got to be 15, 18,
£20, maybe?
So your total is £34.85.
She smiles at me and I stare back, dazed. It's far, far worse than I imagined.
£35.
For snacks? That's a week's supermarket shopping. I can't. I just can't do it. I can't spend £35 on a few little bits. Not after the laptop disaster. I have to leave. I'll text Flora and tell her I suddenly felt ill. She's totally engrossed in Ant anyway. It won't matter.
Actually, I've had a change of plan, I say awkwardly. I can't stay for lunch. Sorry.
You don't want any of this. The girl looks taken aback.
No. Sorry. I feel a bit ill. I have to go.
With shaking legs, I head for the exit, take my coat from its hook, and push the door open. I don't look back. If Flora asks, I'll say I didn't want to pass on any germs to her. I mean, it'll sound lame, but lame is better than broke. The cold air hits me sharply as I step out of the cafe, and I shove my hands in my pockets. Well, that's it then. I'd better head home. And just for an instant, I want to cry. I want to sit on the pavement and bury my face in my arms. I can't afford this life. I can't be these people. I don't have a mother saying, "Darling, here's £100. Or a mother. I know I must have sunk very low because this isn't a thought I let myself have. Much. Tears have actually started shimmering at my eyes, but I blink them back fiercely. Come on, Katie, don't be wet. I've probably just got low blood sugar. I'll eat my sandwich. That'll make me feel better. I sent a quick text to Flora. Not feeling good. Had to go. Sorry. Enjoy lunch. Kiss, kiss, kiss. Then I find an unobtrusive spot on the pavement, crouch down, and get out my cling-filmed sandwich. It doesn't look as appealing as the pumpkin muffin, but it'll taste better than it looks. And in any case...
Cat!
My head jerks up so sharply I nearly crick my neck. Flora is standing 3 feet away, staring down at me in astonishment, holding a cupcake.
Flora,
I manage. Didn't you get my text?
What text?
She demands, looking upset.
What's happened? Why did you leave? I saw you go. You didn't even say goodbye.
Ill, I say in croaky tones.
Suddenly ill.
Sick, I add for good measure, and pull a tissue out of my pocket. I retch into it, turning away as though for politeness's sake.
Oh, my God, says Flora, sounding shocked. It's a bug. Don't come near. But you were fine a minute ago.
Her eyes are wide.
Should I get you a doctor? A taxi?
No, I cry, sounding like a scolded cat. No taxis. I need fresh air. I need to walk. I'll walk. You go back and have lunch.
Why are you holding a sandwich?
Flora's gaze drops curiously to my hand.
Shit.
I can feel my face flaming. Someone gave it to me. Someone thought I looked unwell, so they gave me a sandwich.
A stranger?
Flora looks perplexed.
Yes. What did they say?
They said... My mind scrabbles around.
You don't look well. Here's a sandwich. They just gave you a sandwich?
Flora seems even more flabbergasted.
But why?
I think it was a political thing. I hazard desperately. Anti-austerity sandwiches or something. I'll have it later, when I'm feeling better.
No, you won't!
Flora grabs it out of my hand, looking horrified.
You can't trust some random sandwich from a stranger. Especially if you're ill.
She throws it in a litter bin, and I try to hide my dismay. That was my lunch, and now it's in the bin.
They gave us these freebies, she holds out the cupcake, sorrowfully. But if you're feeling sick... You won't want one, will you?
I've read rapturous descriptions of Butterfly Bakery cupcakes. This one is an exquisite chocolate creation with swirly marbled icing. My stomach is growling at the sight. You're right, I force myself to say. Just seeing it makes me feel, you know, ill. Yuck, I add.
Ugh. Such a shame,
Flora takes a bite.
God, that's yummy. Well, you look after yourself. You're sure I can't get you a taxi?
No, you go. I make a batting motion. Go back to Aunt, please.
Just go. Well, okay. See you on Monday.
Shooting me a last uncertain look, Flora blows me a kiss and disappears. When I'm sure she's gone, I slowly rise from my crouched position. I'm gazing fixedly at my sandwich. Yes,
It's in a street bin, which is gross, unspeakable, but it's still fully wrapped in cling film, so, in theory. No, Katie, I'm not getting my lunch bag out of the bin. I'm not sinking that low.